You're listening to the official podcast of Asbury University, produced by students with God-honoring conversations that inform, edify, and encourage. This is Asbury. We explore culture and current topics through a Christian worldview, promoting a well-balanced life, and we empower our community to belong, become, and be set apart. I'm your host, Abby Laub. Welcome to This is Asbury. I'm in the studio today with Dr. Marvin Ruffner. Welcome, Dr. Ruffner.
Thanks, Abby. I'm really excited to be here, and I appreciate the invite.
We've got a big topic to dive into today. We're going to talk about Christianity and conservationism, which is, you know, a loaded term. So tell us a little bit about what you do at Asbury and why you're here with us today.
Conservation's a really important topic to me. And so here at Asbury, of course, I'm a biology professor, but also I do what I like to call, actually my research is connected to like creation care. And actually, interestingly, never really, that light bulb never went off until recently, but it's really exciting how I can, tell others about my story.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited. We have some great conversation to dive into today, and I think a lot of times Christians or non-Christians even, you know, there's a lot of associations that come with a topic like this. You know, people will jump to words like climate change, or they'll jump to words like stewardship. You know, there's a lot of things associated with this topic. And I want to kind of get to the heart of how we approach it as believers. So Christianity and conservation are two words not always associated with each other in popular culture. You know, culture will tell us like, oh, you don't care about this or whatever, but really, we do. So how do you hope to reconcile this perceived divide?
You know, I guess the first thing for me is just to really be a voice. As a Christian, to be a voice, to be an advocate, you know, to encourage, you know, obviously Christians, but also non-Christians that, you know, we have an important role to be a good steward of our environment. And of course, as a Christian, it's really biblically mandated. I think, you know, we could really go into this pretty deep, but just to keep it simple, you know, there's a lot of reasons. I mean, researching stuff myself and wanting to learn more about the history of why, you know, Christians haven't really been connected to environmental issues. You know, one reason it's a socio-political issue. You know, it's things like that. Another one is really the idea of this dualism, where you know we shouldn't be concerned about earthly things. We should be more concerned about heavenly things. But you know, without getting into it too much, I think that's really the wrong viewpoint to see it. You know, if you as a Christian and a believer and you see God as our creator, it really is biblically mandated for us to be stewards of our environment and not to exploit and destroy and pollute and so on. I mean, in the book of Genesis, it talks about, us being, dominion over, earth and so forth. But I think it was intended for us to be good stewards too. And I think the most important, the key thing is that this is the way that we should honor and glorify God, because I'm telling you, I just turned 50, but the more and more I learn about just our earth and our amazing creation and just biodiversity, it is mind-blowing. And that's one thing I really try to share with my students in the classroom too, is to really, bring this on the forefront.
Yeah, I think just having that awe and wonder of creation does, by default, make you want to take better care of it.
Yeah,
for sure. So what kind of research are you currently doing in this space? I know you had a honeysuckle project you were doing. Let's talk about some of the projects that you're involved with.
Sure. Yeah, so, really, I could go way back to when I was younger and recalling times when I would transplant little plants and, like to, take care of them and sort of be a good steward, and it's actually kind of funny because I recall this one plant in particular, which actually I'm pretty sure that was the invasive bush honeysuckle that I now am researching essentially ways to you know, remove it, to manage it, and, you know, return the forest back to native plant community. So in a sense, I'm attempting with my research to be a better good steward and find ways to, you know, control this invasive shrub that we as humans, you know, I'm not pointing fingers at anybody, but, you know, we've brought over here from another place, and it's caused real havoc on, you know, these forest ecosystems and so forth.
What are some of the ways it's had a direct impact right here in Kentucky? I mean, I've talked to a lot of people who will, you know, refer to areas like the Palisades, for example, that are very fragile kind of biologically. So talk a little bit more about why that is a problem.
Yeah, so the Palisades region here along the Kentucky River is really ecologically important. It supports a lot of rare species, you know, high levels of biodiversity, species that you typically don't find in other systems around Kentucky. And yeah, and particularly there's areas which, especially on the Asbury property, which is along the Kentucky River Palisades, is it's really been overtaken with bush honeysuckle, which is one of the more prominent ones, but there's other ones. So it's a real concern for the conservation of, you know, native species really in these forest ecosystems.
Yeah. Mm. Well, and it's tricky because you could say, well, just spray it with something, right? But then that defeats the whole purpose. So that's part of what your research has been, you know, finding ways to mitigate the spread of this while also protecting the other species you were just talking about.
That's a really good point. Yeah. So the way we target this is we will cut the shrub and we just apply – the only way to get rid of the stuff is to actually apply some herbicide to the cut stump. So, yeah, we don't actually, you know, spray any kind of herbicides throughout the environment that would impact non-targeted, you know, non-target species. Yep. So we try to minimize the impact of that, you know. And that's also connected to being a good steward of the land.
Has it worked, or are you still working through this process?
It actually does work. You know, the big problem that I'm seeing is that it just produces so much seed. You know, you see a lot of little seedlings coming back, but my idea is to come back with some native species plantings that would hopefully provide what you would call, unquote, quote unquote, biotic resistance. So trying to shift the native plant community to being dominated by native species that would hopefully provide some competitive ability against the honeysuckle.
Definitely. Yeah. Well, good luck with that. I know that's an ongoing project. Yeah. Well, I know that's something, I mean, if you know anyone in Kentucky who's involved with farming or anything, they will all tell you honeysuckle is their worst nightmare. So I know you're doing important work.
It's a problem. Yeah. And I've had a lot of people actually, when they've heard about the stories on the website, and they've actually emailed me, and it's been really nice. People are like, "Oh, this is great to see that you're doing that," and you know, and so forth.
What are some practical ways that you encourage your students to practice conservationism or environmental stewardship?
Yeah, you know, I think the big thing is really, well, let me just back up and say, I think one problem today is that particularly the newer generations, because a lot of people are living more in cities and suburbs, and you know, you got more industrial farming, so a lot of small farms are going away. So I think there's a big disconnect with people now from the natural world, so to speak. And so I really encourage students, to open their eyes about the wonderful things in our environment. It really is a reflection of God, our Creator. It's just, it's really amazing. So then I encourage them, you know, if you just do something little, right, it collectively, it's going to be a big impact, like recycling or, you know, maybe riding your bike instead of driving your car somewhere. I had other ideas, loosely, what I got, you know, things like that. But just, you know, join a conservation organization, plant some trees, you know, things like that.
Yeah. Well, it'll probably make you happier, too, in that process. You know, there's a lot of anxiety and depression. We all know this. But I read recently that, I don't know the exact stats, but it was like the average adult spends less than 5 hours outside a week. A week. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's not surprising.
And it's you know, it may be the same or worse for college students. I have no idea, but I mean, that's really bad. So, you know, how can you learn about nature and learn about God's creation if you're just literally never in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a problem. It's problematic.
It is very problematic. Yeah. So do you use the words conservation and environmental stewardship kind of interchangeably?
Yeah, that's a good question. I do. I mean, I guess in my mind, they are. I mean, I'm sure people could have arguments for, you know, how they're different. But mm-hmm. in my mind, they're interchangeable, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. definitely. Yeah. So let's get even more practical. I'm a homeowner. You know, probably a lot of people who listen to this are. What's the first thing we think of when we're taking care of our yard? Like, oh, get the weeds out. Mm-hmm. What would you tell people, you know, if they're really trying to be better stewards of God's creation and, you know, the native species in their area, what would you encourage them to do just starting with their own property?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Of course, you know, we all like to keep our house and our yard nice and, you know, the grass mowed, and that's great. And I do as well. However, I'm probably a little bit different than most people because I've actually let most of my yard kind of go wild, mm-hmm. so to speak. But, you know, first of all, we don't need to apply a bunch of synthetic herbicides or even fertilizer on our yards. There's nothing wrong with maybe doing it every once in a while because mm-hmm. we like to have it green and stuff. But, you know, personally, my yard, I've lived at this house for over 20 years, not once ever applied herbicide mm-hmm. or any kind of fertilizer or anything. Mm-hmm. And it stays pretty lush. And, you know, I got some weeds. And I understand, you know, if maybe your yard is taken over with weeds, you want to do something about it. And I get it. So we could go more into that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I would encourage planting trees and using native plants mm-hmm. in your gardening to support pollinators and so forth. But, yeah, I think it's good to, you know, especially if you have a small yard, mm-hmm. not to even use like a gasoline-type mower. You could mm-hmm. get an electric mower or – actually, I like those little manual ones. Mine's mm-hmm. a little bit bigger, mm-hmm. so I do use
with the wheels that you have to push.
Yeah, with the wheels. Yeah. Like, you know, but, I have about an acre, mm-hmm. and since I've lived there, I've actually established a small forest in my backyard.
Oh, wow.
And I only mow probably – not even half of that acre. You know, I minimize how much I want to mow. And yeah. some people will actually – I've seen people in the suburbs will actually convert their whole front yards to, like, mm-hmm. native plants mm-hmm. and so forth. And that's not for everybody, but, you know.
Yeah. Just something to consider.
Something to consider, yeah.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Even native plants or having, like, a pollinator garden mm-hmm. can really go a long way. That's what we like to do, just plant mm-hmm. a bunch of flowers and
yeah,
just
exactly.
watch the bees go, you know, crazy.
Yeah, and the yeah. hummingbirds. And...
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's fun, especially when my kids were little. That was really fun for them, mm-hmm. and thankfully nobody got stung. So, well, really it just boils down to stewarding what God has given you, you know, and you can look at that with your finances, with your family, with your health, with anything. You know, mm-hmm. we're called to be good stewards. And mm-hmm. this also includes the natural environments in which we exist. Mm-hmm. So I know that there have been a lot of Christians who have been involved with this. Can you just talk about the history of faith leaders and caring for the earth?
Yeah. You know, Abby, it's really interesting. The more I've really delved into this faith and science connection, particularly what we might call creation care, it's actually you're seeing a lot of churches, a lot of denominations actually going towards more green, so to speak, theology. So it's really interesting. And one organization that I really like is BioLogos. It's a nonprofit science and faith organization to help not only Christians but non-Christians to understand, you know, the relationship of science and faith, because they've for a long time kind of been, you know, disconnected. But I really like one of the quotes they provided on there. That the question they posed is, why should Christians care for the environment? And they have a nice explanation and convincing argument for this, but they provided a quote by Billy Graham, which really kind of stood out to me. And this was his viewpoint on it. And I'm just going to read the quote here. Why should we be concerned about the environment? It isn't just because of the dangers we face from pollution, climate change, and other environmental problems, although these are serious. For Christians, the issue is much deeper. We know that God created the world and it belongs to Him, not us. Because of this, we are only stewards or trustees of God's creation, and we aren't to abuse it or neglect it. The Bible says, "The earth is the Lord's and everything in it, the world and all who live in it," Psalm 24:1. So when we fail to see the world as God's creation, we end up abusing it. Selfishness and greed take over, and we end up not caring for the environment or the problems we're creating for future generations. So that was a Billy Graham quote, and I thought it was pretty phenomenal and kind of really sums it up how important the issue is.
That is really good. Yeah. You know, something that really struck me last February when there were tens of thousands of people here, just from all over. I don't know that I ever saw any trash on the ground. It was remarkable just how careful and faithful people were with, you know, just treating our property with respect. I think a lot of this comes down to a worldview issue and how we view the world. You know, as Christians, we believe God, you know, God instructed us to do things. He instructed us to be fruitful and multiply. He also instructed us to be good stewards of the earth. And so I think there's some disconnect, you know, if you believe that sin is a problem, because a lot of people don't believe sin is a problem. They don't acknowledge right and wrong, good and evil. I think if you're operating through that lens that humans are sinful, you know, we live in a fallen world. we're gonna have these problems, and we need to do our best to reconcile them.
Yes, we do.
To their original created order. Do you have any thoughts on that?
You know, I couldn't more completely agree with you. It really all, if you think about it, falls back to, you know, in Genesis and the fall, and you know, Eve eating that apple when she wasn't supposed to, and then so forth. And so that's you know, that's when essentially sin entered the world, so to speak. And yeah, and since then, you know, humans are you know as bearers of God's image, I want to say, quote, humans are, quote, unquote, good, but sin has it really, you know, has really created human nature to be, you know,
fallen.
Yeah, it's probably a best word for it, you know. So it's, you know, we're more selfish than we are selfless, you know. We're always looking for short-term gain, not thinking about the consequences of future generations because, you know, I mean, you know, if, you know, Jesus is going to come back and then, you know, the created order is going to be restored, we shouldn't be concerned about these earthly things, more heavenly things. But I don't agree with that, you know, and there's a lot of other Christians who don't as well, who see it differently, you know.
Well, you could apply that same logic to how you live your life. Well, if I'm forgiven and Jesus is going to come back, then who cares if I live like everybody else? You know, it's the same.
Yeah.
The logic applies there, just like, you know, if you have the attitude of, oh, well, we're going to have a new earth, so who cares? You
know? Yeah.
It's like, it's not how we're called to live today, right now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a professor, Dr. Howard Snyder, who wrote this book called Salvation Means Creation Healed, The Ecology of Sin and Grace. So it's part of the book's pretty, you know, it's very theological and it gets deep, but he also gets very practical about this. And I think he makes a lot of good points. But I wanted to point out this, what he, and this is quoting him from his book, "The disease of sin has so thoroughly wormed its way into all human cultures that people persistently misunderstand creation, its nature, its purpose, and God's plan, its healing. And to misunderstand creation is to misunderstand the gospel." So I think he, you know, really points out some really important practical things for Christians and non-Christians alike. But of course, the book gets pretty deep in some things, but it's really interesting.
Yeah. One area, you know, as I've just explored in my adult life about creation that I just think is so amazing and so special are the healing properties of the natural world. You know, and this is all backed by science, you know, things like the negative ions at the ocean or grounding or, you know, sunshine or fungicides and trees, like all the things that are part of the created order. You know, God said in Genesis 1, it is good.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it is good for our health. It's just something I've been learning more about, the physical properties of the earth being optimal for human flourishing. Mm-hmm. There's so many ways. And it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure this out. It's mm-hmm. like, we all know we feel better if we are in nature.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah.
No one needs to beat you over the head with the scientific evidence. It's just innate.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's no surprise that we're seeing all these health issues, like major health issues mm-hmm. arise in our culture because we are spending less and less and less time outside. It's less than 5 hours a week for the average adult. Mm-hmm. That's pretty appalling.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about what you believe in this sense and what you've experienced in your own life?
You know, I've always said that, for me, nature is good for the soul. And it's not that I'm, a nature worshiper over God, mm-hmm. but, it's the natural world's reflection of God, And so I always felt, even in my youth, when I was a Christian and a believer and a person of faith, but I wasn't at that time as committed with my relationship to God. So I'm mm-hmm. embarrassingly to say, as I am more committed now, obviously. But I just always felt some inner peace, some connection, some spirituality to God, and it almost felt like the anxiety and stress of life, mm-hmm. like whether it's school or work or relationships, mm-hmm. just kind of like leaked out, and I just mm-hmm. was at peace. So I definitely agree that it's good for the soul. And like you mentioned, I think it's in part, responsible for these health concerns we're seeing in our society today, that people are just more and more disconnected, and they don't spend as much time in the natural world. Mm-hmm. we spend more time in our human constructed world, our mm-hmm. suburbs and cities and so forth like that.
I love that you have that view, because I'm the same way. And one thing I've done that's just very practical, this is going to sound so crazy. Mm-hmm. So if you ever see me walking across campus without my shoes on, it's the grounding, the Earth's electromagnetic
field. Yeah, to feel it with your bare feet.
The electromagnetic field of the Earth, it mm-hmm. actually helps regulate our nervous systems, mm-hmm. which, if you think about it, absolutely makes sense.
It does.
Because we're in these artificial structures all mm-hmm. day, holding a phone or touching a computer or whatever. They are also charged mm-hmm. electromagnetically, and it's not native to our bodies, but mm-hmm. the Earth is. It's mm-hmm. just stuff like that I just find so interesting. And it's like, well, of course it is, because God made it.
Yeah, exactly. It just makes sense.
And said it was good.
Yeah.
So it's just getting back closer to those things that he created, I think, can help us so much in so many ways.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, people talk about positive vibes and so to speak.
Right.
That's what I get when I go out in the natural world. Even like walking now, I just have the privilege, I can walk out the back door and, walk through this young forest that I've essentially stewarded by mm-hmm. planting all these trees. Mm-hmm. A lot of them I've grown from seeds myself. So, and I did that yesterday morning before church. Mm-hmm. I was like, man, I haven't spent much time outside. I'm like, mm-hmm. I'm like craving.
Starting to feel it.
Yeah, starting to feel it. Like I need to spend, the cabin fever thing or whatever mm-hmm. you want to call it. I need to, I haven't.
Yeah. So as believers, we can encourage people to do that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Encourage them to what else? Maybe consider doing this in your yard. Is there anything else that you can think of that's just very practical for people as we close?
No, there's so many things you really could touch on. I think it just really boils down to thinking about how we, interact with our environment, how we could be a better steward. And it doesn't have to be just something little like mm-hmm. recycling or trying to conserve water or joining a conservation organization or volunteering to plant trees somewhere, just something little. So I just encourage the listeners to be more conscious of it mm-hmm. and to maybe be more engaged in something, even if it's just little, makes a big impact.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your time today. We're actually going to talk to some of your students in the coming weeks and dive into some things that Gen Z really cares about, like fast fashion and
That'll be interesting. I look forward to that.
Stuff like that with your students. So I'm looking forward to that conversation. Thank you for your time today, Dr. Ruffner.
Yeah, likewise. Thanks, Abby. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for joining us for this episode of This is Asbury. To learn more about Asbury University, visit asbury.edu.